Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
This is a poem called Evensong at Walderswick. Walderswick is a little town in Norfolk, looking out over the North Sea. It's pretty bleak. Anyway, this is a love poem about Evensong at Walderswick. Like music luminous as rain or sunlight on pale stone. Like silences that fall as regular as leaves and silver birch, and winter and a new moon like a candle flame quicken into song. Here I may see as if through glass or gathering sleet, the light of evening garland your hair with dream. Where tears need mould an ordinary vessels, the sun, the sea, goes down. That's it. My final one is called A Lament for the Mad Lupus. I am allowed the few and so familiar faces, named and ordered places, rooms so high that breathing becomes difficult. I long for water. Still, in the spring and glitter of young trees, I am winter, and the long chill squinting light of winter, leaves that seem to swim through mirrors, suns that cluster white as candle grease and bead the river. Among the old maimed faces streaked with rust and rain, among my wiser, longer dead and speckled friends, reflecting red and yellow fire, dying in an old rose garden, the twigs in trees and children twist and splinter. I forgot the rest of it. Hang on. Sorry about this. Talk amongst yourselves. Twist and splinter. In the chill and glitter, there's a one in one pale eyelight of that white and winter sun, and still strange birds in upright flight. Bright winged the birds and dead, the spike and cry and finger prayer of the trees spread in the eye of a child, whose fear is the dry mouth of the morning, weeping us into nothingness. Bless, with our separate curse, our gift, the fallen dying in an old rose garden. We are the knowing mad. And from the knowing mad, no dream nor myth is born, but from the mad knowing, the sphinx and unicorn are fired and bell-tolled from the night into a hard, clear, and February day. That's it.
You got it where people actually remember poetry, you know, on your side of that. It adds something special for people reading a certain poetry. Thanks, Tom. Colin O'Donnell.
Hello, how are you all tonight? I've just been on a little excursion. I went to New York for 10 days and I went to see a movie in the Angelica Film Hall. It's like an independent theatre place that don't exist here anymore in Cork since the Kino left us. But I saw a film called Howl and about the life or the poem by Allen Ginsberg, and I was very motivated and stimulated, and I went for a cigarette. I was waiting with my ticket and I went outside, and in the interim a car had crashed, and I was pretty obscene in the middle of New York. So I wrote a poem, and this is dedicated to Alan and Jack and Kurt and John and George and Kathleen, and it's called Visions of New York. Crash, smash, tinkle, boom, a car on its roof is dragged with chains sharply right-sided up. I sense the holy drama with consternation for kind people in unkind cars that suffer for their redemption. All the sisters are walking around in rubber boots like they're afraid to get their feet wet, are electrodynamically thwarting the laws of electrodynamics, shooting laser beams from their eyes that pierce the soul of the city and channel the true gods who smile gently on their wickedness. I know they know and... I know they know and pretend not to know, so I pretend not to know, and honesty binds me to a fool's fate. And to tell is to break the spell. There's terrible power in restraint. There's beautiful power in the soul. The thinking soul, the unflinching soul, the eiderdown soul, the gossamer soul, the obsequious soul, the ubiquitous soul, the singing soul, the piercing white light, seraphic soul, seraphamic, it's an angel. The sacred, 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 sacred soul, the soul that sails on the furious solar winds of 100 million dreams and 100 million voices that resonate in harmony so that angels hide their faces in shame and tear their angel hair in rage that they cannot share this earthly kingdom, knowing deep down that they don't exist and are slaves to false idols who mock us when we pray, brothers and sisters. Chewing on perfect head, prescription, painkillers, consummation of the night's communion, heroining ourselves like San Francisco alternative rockers on the St. Mark's sidewalk, sailing in boats of madness on rivers of wisdom, seers, soothsayers, visionaries, disciples, role-playing with the real magic that exists. Wisdom of the ages, shaman, Buddha, Bodhisattva, Shiva, third eye open and acknowledging a divine species existing in a dark age. A swindler turns his back on his past and accuses a rapist of turning his back on his future. Both high as kites, both wrong in their assertions. All embrace the inevitable eventually, some with grace, some fiercely, some fearfully. Some weep in their beds in the night when their own personal magic child flies through their window and gently rub their snub noses to Eskimo kiss their avatars. And great kindness is found by those who are looking. For dreams nourish the fabulous Roman candle souls of those who live for their dreams. Talk to spirits whose favorite color is green, whose beauty has no limits, who flirt with controversy, female intuition, she magicians. Surely their dharma is buzzing and shining and flickering like fireflies or bastions of hope, blazing beacons of solace on lighthouses, setting fire to the skies.
Lady on the number sheet of Alifian. Restless in the boiling of her face, next seat to mine, the two fretful curlews of her eyes wheeling, beseeching. But not a soul on this bus, I know, to talk to. Portrait of a Cork man asleep in snow. The day her love died, he broke out We fell down, took a bus to town, waking 1 month later, soaked to the soul in a bog hole at the gates of Kilkenny. It suited him, he realised, outdoor life. After breakfast, al fresco, I bought a pen. Wife, he wrote, I hate you now so much. Seldom in our time together could there not have been a truck or a combine harvester I wouldn't have flung myself under simply for the love of you. The snowdrops here are wonderful. I'm sending you a postcard. And he walked north. He got lost in a field. East of Inishowen, met a fiddler, found God going it alone, cold turkey in a bingo hall full of piano playing Methodists. Pardon the handwriting. I broke my wrist at hymn practice. Though what appears my heart remains stone closed, word is, I have a generous singing voice, wish you were here. Turning south again, he reached Port Leash, stumbled headlong onto the tracks of the Dublin bound train. Escaping with a limp, he took with him 1 August on a journey westward into the basins of Kerry, none of which agreed with his sense of hurling. Alcohol here is tasteless, he wrote one night in panic on the wall of a Listowel holding cell, hot as hell, cheaper than a week of warm fronts. Still, I wish you well. Don't look for me. Winter in Athenry saw him homesick. Late November, he caught a bus back to Cork, counting miles and the size of the driver. That Christmas, he remarked, there was heartbreak everywhere. It was dark the night the temperature dropped. There were 4 of them. The strongest took him down, the smallest cracked his skull with a half-pound bottle of vintage with the waning whiskey. Not having time to write or find a pen, he stayed where he fell, blood hot, running cold, along a clot of frozen concrete, until the sky, peeling black, offered snow. Pale as bone, no shape the same. He was buried by the time they came for him.
I have 2 poems here, and they're completely different. One of them is very tragic, and the other one just written rhymy for a bit of fun. The first one is called Updraft, and it was written that it was after going to the court festival in Galway. A very well known Dublin poet, and I share the first cousin who died a very tragic death at her own hands some years ago. And this other poet and myself, we met at a court in the festival club, and we were chatting about our mutual cousin. And finally, this poem happened. Taking a break from court culture, we took the air on Spittle Strand. A mother and child prepared a kite for flight, headed aloft in solemn offering to the winged gods, and with a few manipulative tugs it took the air, rose, hovered, and dervish danced, weaving and dipping in the stiff April breeze. A thin nylon cord kept it tight to the earth, as it darted about the sky, snapping and cracking in its frantic struggles to fly free to foolish self-destruction. That cord with it was its anchor chain to existence. Without it, it could not have filled with Connemara wind to lift it above the world. The night before, at the festival club, we had renewed friendships in your name. we had toasted your life and talked of you and how you had drifted dragging your anchor chain, tasted reality in rejection, despaired, and cut the line to fly free and disappear into the sun in a sudden violent updraft of red hot air. The other one is just a light-hearted, you know, bit of fun. Those of you from Cork will remember, I forget what it's called now, Gingerbread House.
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting there one evening and this came to mind, called Gingerbread House Cafe. At last I found the very place, it lifted up my mood. For years I'd searched the city streets to find my favourite food. I'm sure to see, I know it is, I argue with myself. My eyes were dafting to and fro, examining every shelf, with timber tables, folding chairs, the Paris cafe air, the carrot cake, the sandy bake, it looked the finest fair. An engineer I vaguely know, with mobile phone to ear, sat talking animatedly about moving here. To lovers on the balcony, eyes locked, talk to the moon, to share their love, arms intertwined, the cream from the other spoon. Some student girls were lounged about and smoking too, how could they? While pimply boys sipped bottled coke and gazed and wondered, would they? Two matrons for their weekly chats drank coffee so demurely, their bags from DT's fashion floor across their laps securely. The waitresses a varied lot, the one with chinny head, smiled at me saying, "It's just a name, we don't serve gingerbread."
Earlier on, I had a question, my real name, and even though the person is gone now, well, I think it's gone. I get that question very, very often. Rosalind Blue is my pen name, and that happened the following way. A good few years back, maybe 95. I was in university in Germany, and I put up an ad, one of them. Papers with reports that I was looking for people for a writer's group. And months later, I suddenly got a letter, was it a postcard, inviting me to a poetic mud fight from Anonymous. So obviously, I was very curious, and I started it off by sending off my first kind of reaction, poetic reaction to the person. And that was the start of a wonderful 2 months' time of poetry exchange of the highest account. And within that, I found out that she addressed me as Rosalind Blue. So there you go. That's the story of my name. And that's why I call myself Rosalind Blue when I read poetry, because that's where the name comes from. And that's what I am, too. Anyhow, I brought three translations today. One of them follows that home series that I've been working on, all poems around home or immigration or missing home, whatever. This one's more about arriving than about arriving here than about my actual home. And I wrote it in 2000. And I will do the German version first and then the English. Das Urteil. Ich fälle das Land meiner Sehnsucht mit Worten. Im Kampf meines Innern gegen das Fremde fällt das Urteil über mich selbst. Die Worte bezeugen meinen Fall. Judgment. I'm felling the land of my longing with words. In the fight of my inner against the foreign, the verdict falls on myself. These words bear witness to my fall.
So
it was the first one. I was very surprised digging out really old poetry here, one written in 95, the next one in 97, both ready to be translated right now, and surprise, surprise, nothing much has changed, even though I wrote it in a different country, about a different country, and at a different time. So here we go, German first again. Der Mann mit eisigem Griff umklammert der Mangel das Menschsein. Geld zerdrückt die freie Seele, gepresst zu Eis ins Quadrat der Menschengedanke. Zeit fließt davon und niemand weiß, wohin sie ungenutzt zergeht. Kalte Herzen zerreißen durch Liebe und leiden unter Wärmeentzug. Mit eisigem Griff umklammert das Menschsein den Mangel. The crunch. With a frosty grasp, the crunch clasps humanity. Money scrunches the free soul, squashed to ice square the humane mind. Time flows away, no one knows where it goes to waste. Cold hearts sever from love and suffer warmth withdrawal. With a frosty grasp, humanity clasps the crunch. The next one is very much the same kind of topic, and I used to call it Deutsche Parasiten, German Parasites, but I changed the title. It's back down to Parasites now. Written in 97, translated just a few weeks back. German first. Parasiten. Mein Volk, ich sehe rot, ruft warnend der Despot. Die von euren Steuern zehren, sie verscheuern, ächtet sie und lasst uns ihrer uns erwehren. Zwingt sie, die Schmarotzer, aus unserer Republik. Doch die Parasiten sitzen wie Termiten, bilden das Gerüst, das unsere Gelder frisst. Rufen die Schmarotzer, die suchend auf sie schauen, leben von den Steuern, um sich ihr Haus zu bauen. Gürtel enger schnallen, sparen heißt von allen Seiten der Despoten. Reich sein ist verboten. Du, Despot, hier dein Gebot, friss dich an unseren Geldern fett. Schmarotzer, mach du mal Diät. Parasites. My people I see red. The despot shouts his threat. Those who from your taxes draw, getting help they squander, let's banish them, enforce our law, and combat those offenders. Perish the useless parasites out of our state. But the actual parasites live off the fat like termites, form the frame themselves that guzzles up our wealth. They call those parasites who're fighting for their rights. They gamble our taxes to build themselves a state. Tighten up your belts! Save us, scream the despots, from all seats in the Senate. We forbid you to have wealth. Eat your ruly and thick despot, fattening up on our stocks. You're the greedy parasite. Time for you to take a diet.
Whoever said German wasn't a beautiful language. We've got about 6 poets left. And about 20 minutes. Just, you do the math. So next up is Seamus Harrington.
Seamus. Thanks, Stephen. Somebody sent me this. I don't know where. Something to do with the medical establishment. In memory of Mike, whoever Mike was. She has no rigors or shaking chills, but her husband states that she was very hot in bed last night. Patient has chest pain if she lies on her left side for over a year. The patient was examined, x-rated, and sent home. On the second day, the knee was better. On the third day, it disappeared. Must have been something lost in translation. I don't know where it came. The patient is tearful and crying constantly. She also appears to be depressed. The patient has been depressed since she began seeing me in 1993. Discharge status, alive but without my permission. Healthy appearing, decrepit 69-year-old male, mentally alert but forgetful. The patient refused autopsy. The patient has no previous history of suicides. Patient has left white blood cells at another hospital. Patient had waffles for breakfast and anorexia for lunch. She is numb from her toes down. The skin was moist and dry. The baby was delivered, the cord clamped and cut, and handed to the pediatrician, who breathed and cried immediately. Occasional, constant, infrequent headaches. And just give you, time is running out, Viper's Prayer. Long distance roadies, refugees from boredom, straddling broad saddle, heavy duty four strokes. Devoted Hell's Angels, we have a herd on High Street, lead us lot into temptation, but deliver us to evil, can evil, stump bike, lookalikes. Amen.
My way, I can't help but notice the sallow leaves, the orphan branches lying dirty on the ground, advertising the autumn. Like falling soldiers shot by bullets and driving rain. For once my wish to be barricaded, watching the action from a window, as addictive as a television screen. I watch a shed before it engulfs me on the other side. The easterly wind blows through concrete to chill the insulated space as rain, as the soldier sends the firing squad and every living thing, that he hands over to the old style gallows. Some sort of doomsday is near. Please drive carefully. I just want to call the door to slam itself. Poor flying man. His authority was reduced to the sitting room, having a strangled hold on the remote control and a whole television. This is all he has, a small box of invitation to pilot and rehearsal. In addition, he owns the weather. Close the door, there's a chilly wind. An educated tweak of someone's hand closes the door. The house is silent, empty. The door is closed. We're all gone, and the door is closed. Poor fine man, the door is closed.
Second O'Donovan, but Ross O'Donovan.
This is just an introduction to a short story I'm just reviewing at the moment. This short has been written for me over a year ago. And even after reviewing and editing it myself, I find it lacking in description. As a writer, one is constantly evolving. I apologize for the type, as I am having difficulty with this traditional typewriter. The margins are a little shy of 3 centimeters. The double spacing is forgotten in some places. Heck, even after spell checking, a lot of the words I wasn't certain of, I still managed to get some misspelled. Not to mention punctuation. So now you know my weaknesses. The reason why I opted for a traditional writer is simple. The more and more I use computers, the more aware I become of how easily corruptible they can be. Or in other words, hacked. I've seen writers and other friends use laptops, PCs for their compositions, and no sooner spell checks are done or published, they are published online or claimed by other authors using pseudonyms. Publicity is always good, whether it's negative or positive. Appreciation and royalties are better if you have invested so much time and energy. I feel I've achieved enough for one lifetime already, but have an underlying bitterness from the lack of acknowledgement at my current financial situation from pursuing my dreams. I do not wish to criticize the foster family for whom I've spent most of my childhood, because I would not be the person I am today if it wasn't for their guidance, as it is only true understanding that they were struggling themselves through their own difficulties while trying to shield us from the evils of this world. They have been both positive and negative influence in my life. What can I say? There's no such thing as a perfect family. Getting back to this short story, unfortunately, I cannot pay you for reading or reviewing of this. If, and that's a very big if, by some miracle I managed to get this published, I would be happy to contribute. Ironically enough, I've consulted MAPS, a financial advisor, and we've put together a budget plan. After cutting back a lot of the joys of my life, eating out, going to parties, going out for drinks, buying birthday presents for numerous families and relations, friends, I am still left with minus 60 euro per week. Figure that one out. Just goes to show what society we live in today. Living beyond our means? I think not. Being overcharged for the essentials, more like it. And you can quote me on that one. Basically, what I would like to achieve from this is to figure out what genre this writing could be classified under. Is there a market? And would it be entertaining? I've also written poetry, songs, and a collection of other work, and I'm reviewing them as we speak.
Well done, Ross. It's pretty daunting coming up reading in front of an audience you don't know, or maybe you don't know something, so well done to you. Well, seasoned open micer Mary O'Connell. Mary.
I wrote this recently. Culture Night allows people to look through telescopes in the precincts of Blackrock Castle and see what heavenly bodies are available. And I was down there in two previous years, and I never saw anything. So I headed off again this year, and I was very lucky. And this is called Jupiter Watch, 24th of September 2010. Blackrock Castle, turreted and dark, etches its silhouette over sleepy waters. The sky breaks open to a harvest moon, raining bounty for the gathering of sheaves. Eyes probe the night, straining to discover the greatest of the planets, mightiest of gods. Telescopes trained on a calculated quadrant seem to wait for clouds to draw apart and lift. Crowds form queues, ponder the paradox. They must look down to see what lies above. Beaming back to Earth, an image cuts the icy void to spiral down and find an angled lens that redirects it to the human eye, captured so clearly that it strains belief to see it closest on its 12-year path. This ball of brilliant light strings its seed pearl moons into the dark, holds their fragile arc shape to its crest. Callisto, Io, Europa, Ganymede. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. The last person on the list is coming all the way from Yall, just to be with us, Christy Parker.
The standard is pretty high here tonight, I noticed. I've changed that very quickly now. two really short poems, because I know you're all in a hurry to get the fuck out of here. For my own books, a couple of poems, they're in that 30-hour day, I think. And I actually need a book itself, of course.
What a joke. Right, no. Right.
The interruptions are
stop us to requirements in this case, actually. Sometimes in life, though, after this crisis that occurs in your life, it's how you react to it and how it may affect others around you as well. This is called demands pain. There come some days in every man's life when everything he does goes wrong, but he'll shrug his shoulders against the strife and he'll keep quiet and carry on. He won't lose his cool, and as a rule, he won't make others suffer. A man understands life can be cruel, and that's when he must be tougher. But girls, we know it, are in a different boat. Oh, girls, sail a different sea. And for once I'm wanted, by Christ, we know it. Every girl launches World War III. He breaks without warning, first thing in the morning. You notice she's looking quite pale. You inquire as to her health in a voice that's heartfelt, and she says,
what are you doing now, you fucking male?
Can I make you something?
Don't patronise me.
You know you should quit straight away, but you want to be there because you love her and care. And she says, just stay out of my fucking way. And whatever goes wrong from that moment on, it is you who will carry the can. If the car doesn't start, or the dark is off part, it's your fault, because you're a man. She gets into distress because her hair is a mess. You say she looks fine, but instead, I've seen you are wise, she narrows her eyes and says one more sexist remark like that and you're fucking dead. Whatever you do won't be enough. Do nothing at all and you're lazy. You go to the shop and bring back the wrong stuff. In 3 days' time, she'll have driven you crazy. She moans about her belly because you can't hear the telly. And you throw her a look of frustration. But in her confusion comes the wrong conclusion and she snaps at your trimasturbation. You tiptoe around the house like a petrified mouse. With each remark comes a riposte that's blunt. To a situation about discursive menstruation that demands there was more every month. And this moronic. It's chronic, but it's mostly ironic. For every man knows the call. We'll still be the same, he'll still get the blame, if the fucking thing doesn't happen at all.
Thank you. We've been asked to manage.
Yeah, it's very short and it'll be very brief. And is it the man? Hang on there.
No,
he's done there. I'll let us talk to him. Okay, very, very short. This is just for any dads here in the house. It's called Happy Birthday. Now that you are 7 years old, it's time you did what you were told. So clean your face and brush your teeth and no more benching in the street. And in your daddy's car, no more dropping potatoes on the floor. And stop sticking out your tongue like lorry drivers just for fun. Stop taking things on from your nose. Stop barking with the windows closed and windows chocolate on your bed. Please stop blaming it on Ted. And no more glue on daddy's chair. Stop putting chewing gum in his hair. And please ignore his toothbrush too and putting creatures from the loo. Try polishing his shoes instead of throwing water at his head. And bring him lots and lots of treats like ice cream, cakes and bags of sweets. And by the way, a dinner plate is not a frisbee with more weight. And now we've mentioned weight, of course. Neither is the cat a horse. And don't you fall in love and think it makes tea a nicer drink. Don't feed your goldfish ham and cheese, plus from now on, if you please. Oh, never mind, it can wait. We'll start all that when you're ready. Thank you.